Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 364 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 23rd of February, 2018, as I record this. And I've just got back from a very chilly walk here in Bath. They're saying there's this sort of freezing cold snap coming in, and I'm just like, whoa. It's very chilly. So today I'm talking to Chris Ducker about the rise of the youpreneur, his fantastic new book about building a business around your personal brand. And I love Chris, and we talk about how to think long term as an entrepreneur, how to identify the community you want to serve, how to turn a nonfiction book into multiple streams of income, and live events in an era of digital. Plus, why Chris made the decision to go indie when he's had a traditional book deal and could have got another one, and why he went that route. And even though Chris and I are very different in terms of our personality, and of course I do ask him about introverts and personal branding, which sometimes sounds a bit, you know, corporate, but I actually think, as Chris does, that this is the key to making a living as a creative, ongoing. And I really loved speaking at Youpreneur Conference in November in London. That was fantastic. And so I hope you enjoy this interview, and definitely check out the book Rise of the Youpreneur. So a few things this week. I did want to pick up on Google. I do like the Google blog. It's an interesting blog because sometimes it's about sort of technical things, and sometimes it's about futurist stuff, because of course Google or Alphabet, their parent company, are very focused on future. And the article that came up said, the next billion users are the future of the internet. The latest generation of internet users to come online on smartphones in places like Brazil, China, India, Indonesia, and Nigeria. As time goes on, the average internet user will be more like these next billion than the first billion who started on PCs, which I suspect is most of us listening, and me certainly started on a PC, moved to a laptop, moved to a smartphone, I still use a laptop and a smartphone and a tablet. I haven't had a desktop since I had a day job, basically. But it's very interesting. It goes on to say, we need to look not at Silicon Valley or London, but to places like Sao Paulo, Bangalore, Shanghai, Jakarta, and Lagos to truly understand where the internet is going. The next billion users are already changing the internet in three key ways: a mobile-only mindset, an instinct for ubiquitous computing, and a demand for localized content. So, I love this, because that mobile only mindset is so important to understand as a shift in demographic continues to happen. Both me and Jonathan's parents all hit 70, and the boomers hitting 70 this year, next year, the year after. This is a big shift in, the sort of the people running the world, basically. You know, we're really seeing change in demographic. And this mobile only mindset is a real change in the future of business. And even as, we see on the one hand growth in print books, because people love buying print in the West, but we're also seeing the demise of physical stores and the demise of the high street. Physical retail is really, really suffering. I mean, if you read the financial news, as I do a lot, even if you just walk around your town, I mean, here in Bath, this is a shopping mecca for the southwest of England, and yet we have a lot of empty retail space. This next billion being digital first, mobile first, and not necessarily English, which is also interesting. I am so excited about, as you know, I'm so excited about AI translation and voice technology. Also incredibly bullish on the global growth for ebooks. And also on the Google blog have been posts about digital payments in these countries. So certainly in India, Google's rolling out their digital payments first. And this will mean we can sell our books more easily into these countries. Now, I obviously have been harping on about this for years, but I'm always early. And as Jeff Bezos likes to say, every day is day one. So today is another day one. But I really do see this demographic shift and this rise of this next billion being the thing that makes a huge difference in the next few years. And it was interesting because I went out last night with some other writers and photographers, and we were talking about how, you know, anyone with a smartphone can take pictures. Anyone with a smartphone can write and upload their stuff to Kindle or Wattpad or Kobo or whatever. The difference between people who are able to take this into the realm of making money, and of course not everyone wants to make money, and awesome, go ahead, share your writing, share your pictures, but if you want to take this into the realm of making money, the thing that will set you apart is the production and the marketing that everyone is creating. Well, not everyone, but a lot of people are creating. But if you can turn that into a product that people can buy, so we were talking about photography, you know, I have lots of photos, but I'm not selling my photos. And the difference is someone who takes their image and turns that into a product that other people can buy, in the same way as with our books. It's like, yeah, okay, I've got all these journals, but if I turn it into a book that someone can actually buy, if I go through a production process of editing and design and covers and then I look at marketing, about reaching out, that's the difference between the people who are doing it for creative expression and those who can actually make money at it. So really interesting times. I am so fascinated by how things are changing. Loving it. Anyway, thought you'd like to know about that too. So my personal update, I also had a bit of a moment this week. Well, I've had a few moments this week, actually. I'm working on this how to write a nonfiction book, and I was boring myself. I mean, I got to this point, I was like, oh, this is so boring. There's a reason I have not yet put out how to write a nonfiction book and how to write a novel as books. It's because I have drafts and they bore me. And then I realized what was missing. And what was missing is what I talked to Rachel about memoir, what I did in The Healthy Writer with Ewan, what I did in The Successful Author Mindset, which is bring the book alive with my journal entries to add those aspects of memoir and storytelling into the book. So I needed to bring it alive with my voice and also with other quotes from other people. So I delved out my journals from 2006 to 2009, and boy, was that an interesting process, because I really discovered the internet, you know, internet business in 2006, started, you know, reading blogs, listening to podcasts, early podcasts as they were back then, really went to thinking about writing to actually writing, read a lot of books. So notes, you know, I have notes from a book like Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott, which everyone should read. Absolutely. You know, my notes from that book are from like 2007. So I was thinking about writing, but I didn't actually get into the writing. And I also, it's so funny reading about things I was learning, the different technology. I had whole pages on how to print my own CD labels and then like, and how to print them at home and then stick them on CDs that I, you know, ripped of my audio course. And then, oh dear me, I'm so glad that we have digital audio. I just record this and upload it and there you go. Oh goodness. So I also, what was interesting is I thought things would happen a lot quicker than they actually did. You know, I was definitely thinking that that first book I would make lots of money with, that I'd be able to get on Oprah, that I would be able to leave my job. And that was sort of 2006-07, but it was 2011 before I left my job and 2015 before I made it back to the income that I left in the day job. So I also found quotes and sort of anecdotes, or, you know, obviously my journal entries about how specific books changed my life. The Last Lecture by Randy Pausch was one of the books that pushed me into doing this, because The Last Lecture, if people don't know that book, it's a great book. He
basically was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. He died very fast. He knew he was dying, and he did this last lecture to his students. I think he was at Carnegie Mellon University. And basically, I read that book and I was like, I have to do this. I can't keep going on doing things that make me miserable. I have to change my life. And then also I read Eat, Pray, Love by Elizabeth Gilbert, which, you know, you can grimace if you like. But that book also changed my life, helped me at a time when I was making some pivotal decisions about things like being happily child-free, which is a decision that it has a huge impact and is one of those binary decisions, not like writing, which you can do over time. You know, a binary decision, whether you have children, who you marry, you know, the job you take, things like Brexit or what president you elect. These are sort of binary decisions that once made can really make a massive difference. So it's so interesting to reflect on how books change our lives. So I definitely went off a bit off piece there, but hopefully you found that interesting. But what I also want to do is I would like to know what would help you the most. So I've pretty much finished the draft. I'm going to finish it probably this afternoon. But I want to make sure in the edits that I answer all your questions and make this book the most helpful it can be. So I have a survey which asks about your burning questions and your thoughts on nonfiction. So I would love you to go and just answer just even one question on nonfiction. Go to thecreativepen.com/nonfiction survey. And I will be doing a random draw from people who enter on the 11th of March, 2018. So please go and enter that survey before 11th of March. So thecreativepen.com/nonfiction survey. I'm also going to email that out to the list and put it on Facebook and Twitter and everything. But basically, and then I'll be giving away some signed books of your choice. So that's what I'm thinking. And it's really interesting doing that. I've also been thinking about starting to think about the plots for the next Arcane novel, and because that's the next one on my list. So yeah, really busy but happy. I'm also doing more videos on YouTube. I just released one on how to find time to write, one of the most common questions that authors have, and also one on how to turn your nonfiction book into a workbook. And you can find my YouTube channel at youtube.com/thecreativepen. Right, so useful stuff. The ConvertKit webinar went really well last week. I actually loved it. I rarely love these type of live events, but I had so much fun, and I know many of you really enjoyed the live interaction. Yes, I am real. Some of you are like, are you real? Is this really live? So I do have another live webinar coming up. I know this is a bit webinar-tastic at the moment, but I'm really enjoying it and there's lots of exciting things to talk about. So I'm doing another webinar with Mark Dawson, my friend. If you've been listening to the boat metaphor, he of the sleek super yacht. Mark doesn't actually have a super yacht. I was comparing him to a super yacht. So many of you know Mark from the Self-Publishing Formula podcast and community. And in the run-up to his launch of the 101 course for those starting out in self-publishing, we'll be doing a live session on how to get your first 10 book reviews, or maybe your next 10 if you're still struggling. And between us, Mark and I have 50 books and over 5,000 reviews, and actually a lot more than that. We just kind of took the top ones, but we know a thing or two about book reviews and self-publishing, to be honest. So that will be Monday, 12th of March at 4 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. It's that weird period in between the US changing their clocks and the UK changing our clocks. So register at thecreativepen.com/March12. So MARCH12, March 12. And as ever, we will do a live Q&A on anything that you want to ask us around self-publishing. So come along, join us live, or register for the replay, thecreativepen.com/March12. Okay, so thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments this week. Remember to let me know what you're doing while you're listening to the show, and preferably send a picture to @thecreativepen on Twitter, or Joanna @thecreativepen, or leave a comment on the blog post. So first of all, Rook Winters says, I'm finally caught up on the Creative Pen podcast after 10 months of listening to the backlist from 2015 to present. Oh my goodness, that's crazy. So thank you. Your podcast opened my eyes to the benefits of going indie. And of course, Rook, remember the podcast has been going since 2009. So there's a heck of a lot on backlist. And again, it's so weird, like reading my words around. I actually wrote a diary entry after interviewing the first couple of people on the podcast, and my reflections on interviewing people was awesome. It was like, I love this. This is amazing. I don't think I knew back then I would still be doing it all these years later, but definitely worth it. Sage Gordon Davis says, watching a family of red mongooses out of the window while doing paperwork at the day job and listening to episode 320. This is good for my soul. Atulia K. Bingham says, I love this podcast, the one with Rachel Herron. I've written a few memoirs and everything in this interview rang so true, validating, informative, and really motivated me to get on and finish my latest book. Fantastic. Trish Heinrich, behold my new standing desk. You also inspired me to switch to a left-handed mouse. Fantastic. And yes, healthy writer pictures are definitely awesome. Kirsten Lillis, listening to the backlist while setting up my writing space and getting ready to jump back into my major rewrite on my first novel. And again, I remember that. And finally, Kate Craik. Hi, Kate, says, on a run along the Swan River this afternoon, listening to this week's episode, hard not to think of my own writer's life boat metaphor with a view like this. Sent a lovely picture of the water. So thanks for all your emails and tweets. You know I love them. And today's show is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life. And I'll play a word from Kobo in a minute. Thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons, JP Choquette, which I think is an awesome name. It just makes me want to go and eat some choquettes. Rook Winters and Marion Elizabeth. I really do appreciate your support on Patreon. Like the tweets and emails, it demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And remember, if you support the show, you get the extra Q&A audio. So, and there's a backlist of that too. So you can get tons of extra audio by supporting the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, here's a word from our sponsor and then we'll get on with the interview.
Are you trying to reach millions of readers around the world? Kobo Writing Life is the fastest, easiest way to upload your ebook to the Kobo store. Our free self-publishing platform lets you keep full control of your books. You set the price and territories, and you can edit your content anytime, with updates going live to the store typically within 3 hours. You'll get benefits from going direct that you cannot get anywhere else. A price scheduling tool where you set promo prices ahead of time. Incredible merchandising opportunities through our promotions tool. The ability to reach library readers by uploading to OverDrive right in your dashboard, and more. Best of all, you keep your full royalties, 70% for ebooks priced $2.99 and up with no cap, and the ability to price free anytime, no strings attached. We never ask for exclusivity, and we are always here to help. We listen to author feedback, and you, yes you, play a central role in improving the platform. We can't wait to roll out some super exciting changes in 2018. What are you waiting for? Go to kobo.com/writinglife and upload today. Have questions? Email us at writinglife@kobo.com. Someone on our dedicated author care team will get back to you within 48 hours. Publish with a retailer that is completely dedicated to books and passionate about helping authors achieve their publishing goals every day.
Today, I'm here with Chris Ducker. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Joanna, nice to see you.
Oh, great to see you as well. Just a little introduction. Chris is the best-selling author of Virtual Freedom and the founder of Youpreneur.com, a mastermind community for entrepreneurs. He's also an international professional speaker and podcaster. And his latest book, which I've got right here and is amazing, is Rise of the Youpreneur, the definitive guide to becoming the go-to leader in your industry and building a future-proof business. Great subtitle there.
Thank you. You make me sound so brilliant with that intro. I hope I don't let you down now.
Oh, no, I know you're brilliant. So, but let's just get straight into it with a definition, because the word youpreneur is one of those words that people are like, yeah, what the hell? So what does a youpreneur mean anyway? What is one?
Yeah, look, it's a made up word, isn't it? It's like Google, but maybe not as, you know, ridiculous sounding. A youpreneur is fundamentally somebody who is building a business based around them, their experience, their personality, what they can provide in terms of value, and the people that they want to serve. That's ultimately what a youpreneur is. And it all came about because, I'm a serial entrepreneur, and I'm very much a brick and mortar guy up until probably 7 or 8 years ago when I started using the internet, you know, for things other than just watching silly cat videos and email, you know what I mean? So, you know, I've started several businesses, many of which I still run and operate myself. And one thing I've come to discover over and over and over again is that people do business with me way before they ever do business with my companies. And it's that P2P, or that people-to-people relationship-building mentality that I've been harping on about now for about 4 or 5 years. And I'm a big believer that if you do put yourself out there, you do build a bit of a personal brand, whether you're building a business based around you and what you do, or something a bit bigger and a little bit more corporate, a little bit more, on a larger scale, it doesn't matter. The personal brand element will create opportunities for you. And really, Rise of the Youpreneur came about because of the people that I started to work with based off my own personal brand. And these are the people like authors and, you know, YouTubers and bloggers and podcasters and coaches and speakers and all those people that are really building the business based around themselves. So that's what a youpreneur is. And they're the favorite type of people for me to work with now. I love it.
Yeah, fantastic. And also it's called Rise of the Youpreneur. So do you think there is a cultural shift in what people want to do? I mean, you know, even with the way millennials are compared to, I mean, you and I are Gen X, I think, both of us. but, you know, we're both millennials at heart, I think. But is that a cultural shift, do you think?
Well, I don't know whether it's a shift per se. I think what's happening is the millennials are kind of, they're growing into the personal brand environment anyway, with social media being as important as it is. When you go for a job, your employers are going to check out your social media profiles now. 5, 6, 10 years ago, you know, they never did anything like that. So your personal brand is being built from the day you send your first tweet or post your first snap, you know what I mean? To talk a millennial language. But I mean, I think that also the shift, the real shift, is actually in people that are slightly older. They realize that actually this is the way that business is going. This is the way that particularly opportunities are going to come their way, using Facebook, utilizing Instagram and all those sort of different types of things, coming up with your own online courses, being in front of people on stage, writing books to sort of claim your niche as an expert and all these things. So I think, honestly, that the shift is more so for the oldies rather than the newbies. and it's a shift, you know, that I kind of started making, like I said, 7, 8 years ago. And it's opened up so many doors for me that I just wanted to kind of encapsulate it all into this one volume, hence the word definitive, right? But I do believe that in terms of the rise up part of it, Rise of the Youpreneur, I think that, you know, really the book is written for the slightly older generation that maybe does feel, oh, holy moly, you know, after 15 years or 10 years even in a career, in a position with all this experience under my belt, I can actually do something different. I can do it for myself. I can do it for the perfect client that I want to work with. And I can ultimately, to a certain degree, future-proof myself from a career perspective due to the fact that I'm not relying on a big corporate name, big corporate clients, and all the rest of it. And actually, you become somewhat resilient, I mean, not necessarily Teflon, but resilient to a certain degree to things like referendum changes and bad political figures getting involved and all these other sort of types of things which do affect the economy. And I think that if you build a rabid audience and community around you as the expert, they become, you know, in love with you for what you do for them. And it just opens up so many doors.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Now, I know that my audience, many of whom are introverts, and I spoke at your Upreneur conference, and of course, I mentioned this, the difference between our kind of personalities. So I want to just, you know, your perspective on introvert authors who don't want to be kind of out there in terms of personal branding. And again, you mentioned the older demographic, in our 40s, it's difficult for some people to kind of change their behavior and start putting things out there into the world because we've kind of been brought up to not do that. So what are your recommendations for introverts and people who are worried in terms of building that personal brand?
Well, I will say that at the Upreneur Summit, as you brought it up, there were a couple of times throughout the course of that event where I did sort of leave the conference area. I went up to a quiet staff room that we had where we had a big sofa and everything. And I sort of lay down, got into the fetal position and rocked myself back and forth a couple of times and had my own little introvert moment up there. but I think, you know, ultimately, if you're really that introverted, then a personal brand business model is not really going to be for you. I think that, you know, the very thought of building a personal brand means that you've got to put yourself out there a little bit. You don't necessarily have to put your entire neck on the chopping block, but I mean, I think that, you know, you've got to be seen to be, you know, building influence, I think. And I mean, from an author perspective, you can hide behind your words and your pages and your beautifully designed book covers if you want. But if you really, I truly believe this, if you really want to build, you know, a great community of people that are going to buy everything you make and market, that are going to come to you as their favorite in whatever industry you're in, and that's really what a Upreneur needs to do. They need to become somebody's favorite, right? At the very end of the day. If you want to do all those things, you're going to limit yourself if you don't want to be in the limelight a little bit. Book signings. I mean, it's a great opportunity, as you know, to meet your readers in person. And I'm a big believer in building relationships with handshakes and hugs. I truly believe that. And you can't do that if you're super introverted and you just want to sell your book on Amazon and not go anywhere near human beings. You know what I mean? It's a scary thought for some people. But if that's the case, then I guess it's probably not the best business model for you.
I'll throw this back at you then, because I kind of disagree.
Throw away.
In that, handshakes and hugs make me go, whoa, and I know people listening are going, bleh. You mentioned book signings, which nowadays, I mean, you did a great book signing at one of your events where people were already there to love you. But for most mm-hmm. authors, book signings are awful and nobody turns up. So yes. Book signings are kind of not one of those things. But you and I mean, you've been podcasting for years. You've built a community. You've built relationships all over the world, even though you've been living in the Philippines. And you're in the Philippines right now, although you're moving back to Britain, but you don't have to be physically there, do you? So what about things like podcasting, social media, ways where you can be physically distant, but you can still share authentically, I guess? So what are your tips for sharing authentically online and still curating your life?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question, because I think, you know, I have been over here this whole time. Obviously, I travel and I speak and I do all that stuff. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's hard because I'm literally on the other side of the world. Time zone differences are a nightmare. And believe me, I've had many, you know, very late nights when I've had to be available for calls with people, say, in LA at 9 a.m. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning here, right? So, you know, I've eaten my fair share of dirt, let me tell you, over the years to get to this point. But I think that things like podcasts, where if you don't want to be in front of the camera, that's fine. You just talk into a microphone and you can get your point across and share your wisdom and create that value for your audience that way. Social media, you know, even webinars, you know, you don't have to go on camera to put on a great free webinar and help people that way as well. So I think, you know, in terms of tips, it really comes down to just being as much of your authentic self as you can be. Understand that online, people can smell the BS from a mile away nowadays. There's just been too many idiots out there doing too much stupid stuff. We know, we can see it, we can smell it. Don't lie, don't create, you know, untruths and do all those silly things. You know, like rent a Ferrari for $4,000 for the day, take lots of photos outside some big house that you have no idea who lives there and sort of try and claim that that's you sort of thing. But no, I mean, you know, there's a lot of that stuff. So just be super authentic. Throw as much of you and your personality into it as you feel comfortable doing so. And amazing things will happen. And like I said, it's about becoming somebody's favorite. It's about becoming somebody's favorite podcaster or somebody's favorite crime author or somebody's favorite YouTuber or somebody's favorite Facebook, you know, celebrity or whatever, right? So I think it really just comes down to just throwing as much of you in there as you're comfortable doing so.
Yeah, that's
and
great.
Doing it consistently as well. The consistency factor is a big one.
Yeah, and that consistency, I'll tackle that now because that long-term thinking I think is so key. You know, both you and I have been podcasting for years. We've been putting stuff online for years, out there doing things for years. And I think in the author niche particularly, people think that they write their first book and they become a millionaire and everything's sorted. So yeah. What are some of your thoughts on the long-term thinking and the positive mindset for that long-term? Like, what's kept you going?
What keeps me going are the stories that I get back from my community and the people that follow my work. It's, the quick tweets that come back after doing a public masterclass at the beginning of the year where people are saying, I think you've just literally doubled my income this coming year from spending an hour with you online. Thank you. It's hearing from a guy who unfortunately lost his wife after, you know, giving birth three years after giving birth to their daughter to cancer, and then being able to read my first book, Virtual Freedom, and realize that he actually doesn't have to carry on doing the 15-hour days. He's built a virtual team, and now he can drop his daughter off at school every day and pick her up and spend time with her in the evening and all that sort of stuff. So what keeps me going is genuinely leaving as deep and as warm mark on everybody that I come into contact with, whether it be from a business perspective or a personal perspective. When I'm done and I'm finished and I've gone, when people talk about me and they say, you know, they talk about legacy or they talk about what I've left behind, I just want people to say that he was a really nice guy and he genuinely left a mark on my life. That's what I want. I don't need lots of money or anything like that. I just need people to believe that I somehow created a better something for them in their lives.
Mm. And I like that. And I think the idea of service to a community, and that comes through very much in the book. And at your conference, there was a lot of man hugs and man tears going on. It was lovely. It was very emotional.
There were many man tears at the event, and myself included. I didn't, you see, look, you understand, right? I have spoken in front of tens of thousands of people in my career all around the world. I have never choked up on stage before. And I've talked about losing my mom in my early 20s. I've talked about, you know, lots of other relatively emotional stuff on stage through telling stories and things. I've never choked up on stage, but it was something about that event, that crowd, that venue, that city, that moment that just kind of got to me there as I was wrapping up the event. And I choked up. I mean, I didn't have tears streaming down my face or anything, but I mean, I choked up and had to hold it together a little bit for a split second there. But it just goes to show you that when you're doing good stuff for the right type of people, that should happen. Mm. Like that actually should happen. We don't want it to happen too often because it could get a tad embarrassing, but it should happen because it means that you care, you know?
Mm. I think that's a really good point. And so many authors will write the book from, and it's very hard because many writers want to write a book from an inner sense of needing to express something. So it's when you write, the focus is in your own head. And then often mm-hmm. authors try and work out their target market or the community that they want to serve after they've written the book.
Right.
And you have a mass, which then becomes difficult because you might have written a book and you don't really understand, you know, who the target market is. Now, you know, talking about serving community, and you have a lot in the book about finding, you know, customers. So just talk about how did you find the community, or how did you identify the community that you wanted to serve so much?
Well, that was the whole thing. You see, this is another reason why I love the idea of the Youpreneur business model, because you can fundamentally pursue your varying interests as an entrepreneur yourself. And when you're building a community of people around you, just by providing great value, providing great content, by answering the right questions that you can answer, and you know, through your experience, your wisdom, whatever you want to call it, you can genuinely help somebody. By doing that for a number of years, it's gotten me to the point where I can now write this book, because it's pure experience. And I'm writing the book for the people that I've probably attracted to me and my work only in the last 3 years. But I'm also now, because I know these are the people I want to work with for the rest of my career, I now am writing the book for everybody that finds me in the next decade as well. And I love that. I love the fact that I've been able to get to the point where I can write this very book right now in my career, when I've still got so much impact I know that I can make on the people that I come into contact with. And so I wouldn't have been able to write this book 5-6 years ago. Mm. I wouldn't have been able to do it, because as you clearly pointed out, a lot of it comes down to experience and serving and customer service and all that stuff. And I just think it's very, very important to understand that you can't, you know, like you pointed out, you it's tough to write a book and then sort of try and go and create the business around it. It should be the other way around. And mm-hmm. so, you know, everything that we talk about in the book, and I talk about in the book, the, you know, the Youpreneur ecosystem, right, of where you have all these different streams of income all feeding into that one kind of group, so to speak, live events, online earnings, info products, speaking, coaching, mastermind, you know, high-end masterminds, books, you know, all these things that you can do as that Youpreneur business owner, that, you know, you can't make that up. Your customers will ultimately tell you what that business of you becomes over time. And that's exactly what's happened. So everything that's in the book, I'm just sharing what works, because I know it works, because it's worked for me and it's worked for hundreds and hundreds of my clients as well.
Mm. And actually, yeah, thinking about, because you wrote Virtual Freedom as well, which is about outsourcing, and you have still an outsourcing company, right, in the Philippines. And so you, as an author, you've written from your experience afterwards, and Virtual Freedom was the same. But I'm interested in your shift. So you said then the people I want to serve for the rest of my career. And I think when we're in the moment with the latest book, that is how we feel, right? So, but did you feel that when you wrote Virtual Freedom? And how has Chris the author changed? Because you probably felt that way then. You know, explain how that feels.
I have to be honest. You know, I've got to be honest. I don't think I felt that way with Virtual Freedom. I definitely did not feel that way. I felt like I wrote a darn good book. And the 800 plus 5-star reviews on Amazon will back that up. I mean, we still sell hundreds of copies each month. I mean, clearly the book is a great book and it's helped thousands and thousands of people. But I wrote that book because I had been blogging and podcasting on the subject of virtual business and building virtual teams and working with virtual assistants and you know, really utilizing VAs to run, support, and grow your business. I had been doing it myself for years and years. So again, I wrote the book based on my own experiences and the experience of the people that I'd work with as a service provider within that industry. And I wrote the book because honestly, I was kind of done, Joanna. Like I was done writing about it on my blog. I was done talking about it on podcasts. I don't know how many podcast interviews I did in the space of 4 years, maybe 300 on the subject. I mean,
you were on this show, and it was a great interview.
That one was the best one. But no, I mean, I really was done, and I felt like now is the time to put it all into one volume, try and make it as evergreen as possible, while still obviously talking about things like, you know what, yeah, financial savings or the setups and that side of things and what tools work and what don't. Could it do with an update? Yes, it could. 4 years later, it could, particularly on the resource section and the tools that people use and things like that. But honestly, that's like 5% of the book. The rest of it is still evergreen. But I didn't feel like, I felt like I was writing a great book and I knew it was going to help a load of people. But I didn't honestly feel like, I didn't feel close to the readers of that book like I do now. Because whenever I meet a Youpreneur community member or someone from, you know, that attended the event, or, and I know this is going to happen now that the book is out, whenever I hear back from someone, I know that they're going to be a small business owner, they're going to be a coach or a consultant or an author or a speaker or, you know, a content creator online, or they're going to be me. Like, that's who I've become for the years. And that's how I now build all my businesses. Yeah. So I feel quite an incestuous closeness.
I think you're right there. I mean, the point is they're gonna be me, what you said there. And that's exactly what I've done by sharing my journey as an author. I've attracted people who are going through the same journey, and it's just natural. Yeah. But how has your writing process changed between was Virtual Freedom your first book?
And yes, it was.
Yeah. So how have you improved your writing process, and, you know, how did you actually get this book done?
Great question. So Virtual Freedom was a book about working with virtual staff to delegate tasks, to buy more time and become more productive. So obviously I decided to write every single word of a 65,000 word book, didn't I, instead of delegate any of it. So that was the big change this time around with Rise of the Youpreneur. This time around, I worked with an incredible editor who interviewed me. We did around about 12 hours of one-on-one interviews where he just kind of clawed everything out of me that you can imagine possible. We had every single minute of those calls transcribed, and then we worked together to start putting together ultimately the different sections of the book that, you know, there's three main sections. We talk about building, marketing, and monetizing. And so those, we knew those were going to be the three big main sections of the book. And then obviously we've got a whole bunch of chapters in each of them. And we just started copying and pasting and cutting and deleting and getting rid of all this stuff. And eventually we ended up with a pretty good, I'm not going to say manuscript because it certainly wasn't one, but we ended up with a pretty good collection of my thoughts and my ideas and my experiences and my stories and all the rest of it. And then I went to work really kind of just fine tuning all of that. So, you know, in terms of like genuine typing hours, I did a third this time round compared to what I did with Virtual Freedom. And that was huge. Like, that was really, really big. And I felt, honestly, I felt like I got more out of me as an author this time round as well. I mean, I'm more of a talker than a typer anyway, being a podcaster and a speaker. So it just became really natural for me to be asked questions and for me to just sort of go off on a tangent. And you know, the editor that I work with, he was just like, you know, if you feel like you're just waffling on, just keep waffling, because, you know, it could only be just around the corner that you drop that value bomb that we need to end the chapter. So that's what I did. I just waffled on. Oh, I wrote the book. I waffled.
Well, talking and dictation now, whether you use somebody else asking you the questions or whether you just dictate it yourself, this is becoming more and more a common way to write. I wrote my last novel with dictation. It's something that people are doing. So, and the book is very much got your voice in it, which I think also comes through when you do the first draft by talking. So I think that's fantastic. So I do want to ask you, I mean, you talk, you know, one of the sections is about monetizing. And I mean, you've mentioned a number of the things that you're doing for monetizing. So can you just go through those again so people can understand, when you have a nonfiction book, what are some of the ways that you can take that same content and turn it into multiple streams of income?
Yeah, I mean, look, when you're writing a nonfiction book, ultimately you're writing about one particular topic. It's usually a how-to scenario, or maybe it's one huge, great big long opinion piece or whatever. Look, I'm no expert. I've written two books, barely, right? I'm no expert. But what I do know is I know how to get my thoughts, my ideas, my concepts, my strategies out of my head, placed into the real world to find out whether they work or not. And if they do, I report on them. If they don't, I also report on them, but I point out what went wrong and why things should be avoided. But I mean, when it comes to the actual monetization of things, I mean, if you imagine like writing a book like The Rise of the Youpreneur, that's a book about how to build a personal brand business based around you and who you want to serve. So how are we going to monetize that? Well, we're going to monetize it by, first of all, writing the book, right? Then we can go ahead and hit the speaking circuit from it. At first, you might not charge a whole lot. Maybe you won't make any money at all as a speaker. Possibly you might be out of pocket for a while. But sooner or later, if you do enough of it, you'll build a name for yourself. And then you're making $2,000, $3,000, $5,000, $10,000 per keynote, whatever the case may be. So speaking is a great way to be able to make money. You've also then obviously got info products. So maybe it's a small video course or a downloadable audio course that you want to create. Info products go into the mix. Maybe you can write a whole collection of ebooks that back up the certain different sections from within your main book, but then also come with a few video lessons to kind of throw in for bonuses and things like that as well. Maybe you go ahead and you open up a membership community where people can get access to you on a daily or a weekly or a monthly basis. Possibly you're doing paid webinars. Now, everybody, when you say the word webinar, everybody thinks 45 minutes of content, 15 minutes of a pitch, $2,000 product. It doesn't need to be that way. Charge $20, $30 for access to the webinar. Your show up rates will go up through the roof. You might not have as many people registering, but your show up rates will go up through the roof. And then, you know, you don't sell anything at the end of it. You're just coaching. But if you're doing it in the right way, if you're advertising it right, if you're, you know, creating a paid webinar that people genuinely want from you, they will show up for $30. They will show up for it. And if you sell 100 people, then you made yourself $3,000. Thank you for playing, right? So there's all these different types of live events, high-end coaching. When I do one-on-one coaching, which is very, very rare nowadays, but when I do it, I charge upwards of $2,000 an hour. People will pay for access to my brain. 10 years ago, that wasn't the case. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways to kind of skin the cat, so to speak. But what really matters is that you are serving your community in a way that you know, regardless of what medium you use, you are providing a solution to their problems. If you do that and you do it well enough, then you are blessed to be able to go ahead and put a price tag on it.
Yeah, no, I think that's fantastic. And then I wanted to ask you about ambition, because, you know, you mentioned earlier, it's not about the money, it's about service. But I know that you have a very good business. And I'm very ambitious. And I have a very good business. But I want more of all of this. I want more creativity. I like money, I would like more money. You know, people listening are creatively ambitious and financially ambitious. But one of the issues when you're trying to build a bigger business, like a multi six figure, seven figure, bigger business, how do you do that without killing yourself by working? And I know that ties a bit into virtual freedom, but for the youpreneur model, that is a big problem, because essentially you're saying this is all about you. So how do you balance a business around you and not killing yourself?
Well, this is the thing. This is what it all comes down to. Encapsulate it right into that. You're building a business based around you, but not completely reliant on you. And that's where the magic happens right there. Now, is it going to happen overnight? No, of course not. You're going to have to put in the extra hours. You're going to have to work the odd weekend. You're going to have to travel and maybe be away from your family a little bit to go to that big conference, to meet the people you need to help you build your email list and, you know, all that sort of type of stuff, right? But from a long-term perspective, I truly believe that this is the best business model for us as career professionals today. Now, it might be different 50 years from now, but you know what? Our kids will figure that one out. You know what I mean? It's kind of, you know, for me, I think that as long as you're doing enough to be happy with what you're getting out of it, you know, you shouldn't second guess yourself. I love making money. I'm very vocal about that. I'm selfish. I need to make money. I got four kids, for Christ's sake. That's a lot of birthdays and foods and, you know, school. All the rest of it. So, and schools. I mean, good God, right? So there's nothing wrong with wanting to make money. Just don't sell out to do it. You know, be authentic, be real. Don't coerce people out of their hard-earned money or anything like that. Do it in the right way by providing solutions to the problems, like I said. But no, I mean, if you're getting to the point where, you know, you're working every single waking hour and you're not getting any way, then you've got to start questioning what you're doing. But really, for me, it's a non-stop mission of, you know, work-life balance between, first and foremost, being the best father I can be, being the best husband I can be, and then being the best leader that I can be in my business sphere, right? Mm. So, you know, I've got my priorities very, very, very straight, and I don't let anything get into the way of them. But you know what? Actually, right at the top of that list, even before the father and the husband thing, right at the top of the list is looking after me. Because if I burn out, then I'm no good to anybody. And so, you know, it's, you know, all those little hacks of waking up dehydrated and not going for the coffee straight away, but, you know, drinking a couple of nice big glasses of water and then exercising every day. I hate exercising. I hate it. I'll be the first to admit it. I despise any and all forms of exercise. I really do. But I do it. Every day I did 30 minutes on the cross trainer and 15 minutes with the resistance bands this morning. I don't like any of it, Joanna. I don't like it, but I do it because I know it'll mean I'll stick around for a lot longer.
Yeah. And I think those habits, and, you know, I'm going to advise people to go back and listen to our previous interview on outsourcing and things, because, that interview changed my perspective on it at the time. And I started working with virtual assistants. And I think you have to start making the space. And as you say, putting your priority list in order. So I want to ask you, like, one of the things, just a couple more questions before we're done, but one of the things that you mentioned in the business model is experiences. And again, sort of circling back to the Youpreneur Summit, which is happening again in London in November 2018, and I imagine it will carry on. But it was, that type of experience is a big deal and takes a heck of a lot of organizing, and you obviously have a team to do that. But do you think that physical experiences, in-person experiences, will become more important as we go more digital? So, you know, we're talking about the Youpreneur model is what, 99% online generally, but are these experiences going to be bigger in future, bigger in importance, not necessarily in size?
Without a shadow of a doubt, without a doubt. In fact, actually, I'm not just doubling, I'm quadrupling down on them going forward. Not to say I'm going to be doing four big events every year, but in terms of the overall focus of bringing people together in person, it's going to become a very, very big focus for the Youpreneur brand and you know, the company which will, you know, be the Youpreneur company going forward. I think that, I mean, look, I've been running live events since 2011, and, you know, my first ever event that I held was 8 people, a one-day mastermind around a conference room table at the Aloft in the Docklands in London. And I'll never forget, I'd never done an event like this before. I'm in the Philippines. I think, well, I'm going to go to the UK. Let's do this one-day event. I'll charge £300 per person, and I'll be able to offset the cost of going a little bit. Not completely, but, you know, whatever. And I'll be able to bring some people together. We'll talk business all day. We'll have a lot of fun, maybe experience a few breakthroughs. It would be great. And so I wrote the email out and I sent it to my list. And then I went out for dinner here in the Philippines with my wife. And so it would have been just sort of probably mid-morning or so over in the UK. When I came back, I had sold out. I sold out. Every spot had sold. And I looked at my wife and I said, holy moly, this is crazy. And she said, I guess people just want to hang out together. Mm. Why don't you leave it overnight and see how many more you sell? So I did. And the next morning when I woke up, I had six more orders come in. So I ended up selling another couple of spots within a couple of days after that. And we did 2 one-day masterminds back to back with 8 people a pop. And obviously offset the cost of the trip completely. So not only did I set out to kind of do what I wanted to do initially, which was offset the cost of traveling to the UK, but I also brought 16 people together over a 2-day period, many of whom had never met each other before, ever. And, you know, some of them are still in mastermind groups with each other today. Some of them are still in touch with each other. Some of them have set up incredible businesses. Some of them are putting on their own mastermind events now with their communities. Mm. And, you know, you fast forward 7 years to the Upreneur Summit, where we had almost 400 people all in, including speakers and, you know, the team and everything all there. That was kind of like going full circle for me as an event organizer, and clearly seeing, people don't know the sound booth, the AV booth, which overlooks that entire beautiful venue at the Queen Elizabeth Center. I can see what's going on before I'm introduced, before the events even began. I'm watching from upstairs, and I'm seeing what people are doing. They're shaking hands. Some of them know each other. They're dropping down those hugs. Maybe they're switching out some business cards. They're talking. They're, you know, all this stuff is going on, and we haven't even started yet. That's why I do these live events. So I think it will become more and more and more important for anybody following the Upreneurial model to get people together in person.
Mm, I agree with you. And actually, the event was amazing, but it was a little overwhelming for me personally. But the little small events, I think, are something that anyone can do. And
absolutely,
actually not that big a deal. And it's a model that I want to do more of because, you know, I think, as you say, it's going to become more important. So I hope people listening get that physical events, an event is such a big word. Like you say, it can just be a meeting. You could just have a meeting.
Meet up.
Okay. Yeah. So final question. I want to ask you about the book itself. Again, on the video, I have it here. And it's an awesome, the version I have is an awesome hardback. It's beautiful. You're self-publishing in inverted commas because, you know, the word self-publishing is ridiculous. You are independently publishing this book. So talk about your choices around to independently publish, because you could have got a publishing deal, and why are you doing it this way, and what are the things you've come up against?
We put a proposal together for the book based on the fact that Virtual Freedom did so well, and we did shop it around a little bit. We had 4 offers of varying degrees. None of them, honestly, based on my experience with Virtual Freedom and all the rookie first-time author mistakes that I made, none of them were good enough to make it worthwhile to go through that again and not control ultimately the process, not just the initial launch and publication of the book, but also what it will mean for me and our business for many years to come. And because this is the manual to the Upreneurial, you know, kind of mindset, it's important that I can update it whenever I want. It's important that I can control every single aspect of it. So it didn't take long for us to figure out that we were going to independently publish the book. I love that. It's so much better than self-published. I'm so going to use it from now on. So it didn't take us long to figure that out. So then we teamed up with a company which came highly recommended to me for the jacket design, for the internal design. And they really, they nailed it. Mm-hmm. They nailed the inside pretty much immediately. Like, I was genuinely impressed. The cover we had to work on a little bit. And then it was 50-50 as to whether I go on the cover myself or not. So we worked on a couple of different kind of graphical content type covers and things like that. And in the end, I kind of honestly, I took a bit of a vote from some of my influencer buddies and, you know, that sort of type of thing. Which one do I go with? And almost everybody said, you got to put yourself on the cover. You're the entrepreneur. You're the guy who founded it. You need to be on the cover. Okay, I'll go on the cover. And that means I got to get a good cover printed, because if it's a photograph, it can't look crappy. So fast forward a little bit and, you know, there aren't that many options. You know what I mean? And so, you know, we went the Ingram Spark model. We went the Create Space model, and obviously we've had time to play around and look at proofs and things like that. We printed privately with a company in London for the hardback cover, which is what you've got there. I was over the moon with that. I couldn't floor that in any way, shape, or form as a hardcover. We have decided that we will not make a hardcover version available on Amazon. I'm going to pull that back and hold it for myself, and for my own live events, and for sending to, you know, clients and influencers and people like that, because it is a little bit more impressive, you know, a hardcover, all that kind of stuff. So I've held that back, and you won't be able to buy it except at live events.
And secondhand, they'll be up on secondhand very soon, I bet you.
I should bloody well hope not. But you're probably right. There will be a few up there. So then it really came down. I mean, you know, we're looking so. I mean, let's pull them out. Let's have a look at what we got. So we have, all right, let's do this. So we've got the hardcover, which we've been talking about.
Yeah.
No need to talk about that anymore. We all kind of know what the deal is with this. It's a beautiful cover, great jacket design. The guys on the inside, they were like, yeah. They said, do you want to go with silver or do you want to go with gold? For the debossing, I said, well, we've got to go with bloody gold. It's gold, obviously. Bloody silver, give me a break. So we went with that. That was great. Ingram Spark with the matte finish. I'm a fan of the matte finish book, but I wasn't impressed with this enough to stop here.
Mm.
So we went ahead and we did. Oh, this is, I should say, this is also the paperback version that we had printed with the private printers in the UK, which we didn't give out. There's 100 copies. That's what kind of, you know, we've sent out to a lot of people just as gifts and things like that as well. So Create Space comes into play with, quite frankly, a shiny vinyl cover, which I'm not a big fan of, if I'm to be honest. But I think because it's a photograph on the front cover.
Mm, it does look nice. It's called, what's it called? It's not called vinyl. It's called gloss. It's called gloss.
Gloss.
Cover.
It's a gloss. Good. Thank you for that. Gloss. So, yeah, and it just the photograph just looks so much better. I mean, honestly, with the Ingram Spark matte cover, it looks like I'm wearing a black blazer in this photo, and I'm not. It's a navy blue, as you can clearly see.
Yeah. And this is a great tip, which is you don't have to put it live, right? You can upload the files, you can get one copy printed and compare them and choose the best one, which is what you've done.
I will also say as well, and this is very interesting, so let me just show you these side by side by side on the spine. This is really interesting from a paper stock perspective. So at the top here, you see quite a chunky book.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the book that was printed with the company in London. So this is a big printing house, and it's what they do every day. Paper stock, slightly better. The Ingram Spark there in the middle is by far the thinnest of the three options. Mm. So a different paper stock with that. And then at the bottom, you have the glossy Create Space version. So you can see the three totally different sizes, right?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah. And what about the audiobook?
The audiobook is going to be recorded in an upcoming trip to the United States. Now, here's the weird thing. This was something at first I was like, well, I've got all the gear here.
Yeah, pro setup.
Why not, right? I can just do it here. But I spoke to a few people that have recorded their own audiobooks, and they said to me, like, you know what? It's better to do it in a studio with an engineer. He can walk you through things. He'll pick up things that you're going to miss. And the quality will be 100% perfect. So you're better off doing it. So I will actually be recording it on an upcoming trip to the US. Look, the book comes out February 20 in paperback and ebook format. And then the audio book will probably be available, I would have thought, give or take a week or so, end of March, beginning of April. So a little bit of a delay on the audio book, but I don't think it's going to cause that much of an issue.
No, fantastic.
Also, knowing my people the way I do, my community, the chances are they're probably going to buy a paperback and then the audio at some point further down the line too, which is good for me from an author's perspective because I get to make more money as well as giving them what they want as well. So that's obviously something to be quite aware of as well. Sort of give too many options up front, they might have only just picked one.
Well, you know, because I have this, I mean, I'll probably get it in audio as well. I think with nonfiction audio always benefits from having a print copy as well, because, you know, for example, you have diagrams and things that you basically in the audio you have to say different things around that, and you all give downloads and things like that. So and it's great that you're recording it yourself, and I'm glad you're doing it in a studio because it really does help.
Yeah, well, with Virtual Freedom, I did do with the audiobook version. I didn't record it myself. Mm. I had a voiceover artist do it, a British guy who has also been in TV and film and all that sort of type of thing as well. And the moment I heard the recording, I knew I'd made a brutal, brutal error. I mean, it was like a cross between Shakespeare and some dodgy independent, you know, European movie. It just did not work at all. And you know, I kind of honestly, I've just sort of laughed it off and made a joke out of it. So, well, I delegated it. It's a book about delegation. I delegated the audiobook, you know, and I kind of put it to sleep, but I was honestly quite embarrassed by it. So this time around, it was bound to be me.
Well, it's great. And you've chosen to independently publish mainly because of control. And also you've used a whole load of professionals to create the most professional product. So I think it's a brilliant job. So where can people find you and the book and everything you do online?
Well, the book is available at either youpreneur.com/book, or you can go to riseoftheyoupreneur.com, one or the other. It's obviously up on Amazon and all that sort of fun stuff as well. And if people are interested in me and what I do, they can just visit my website, chrisducker.com. Simple as that.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Chris. That was great.
It was a pleasure to be on. Thanks for having me.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Chris today. And if you are interested in building a business around a personal brand, very similar to my own business model, then go and get a copy of Chris's book, Rise of the Youpreneur. So coming up next week, I'm talking about five important things that authors need to know about self-publishing with the lovely Mark Dawson. And Mark and I always have fun, and we're taking it back to basics next week. So if you're new to indie, it will help you orientate yourself. And if you're established, but things aren't going quite as well as you'd like, then maybe it's time to revisit the basics. And remember, you can also register for the webinar with me and Mark on how to get your first 10 book reviews, thecreativepen.com/March12, M-A-R-C-H-1-2. And also, if you'd like to help me with the nonfiction survey, go to thecreativepen.com/nonfiction survey. So happy writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes, available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.